Hello, 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 everybody. I'm Pedro.
And I am Meredith.
And this is Gritty Reboot. I don't know why I have a wife with a weird voice again. Today is a little bit different. We are not covering a reboot, per se. We are talking about Evil Dead 2, and we actually have some guests in the house.
Yes, it's a special episode. We have my brother and my sister-in-law here.
You guys want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Nick. I'm the brother-in-law.
He is the brother-in-law?
Hi, I'm Karen. I'm the sister-in-law.
/wife.
Wife, yeah.
Together, we just decided, they were visiting, hey, let's just do a show together.
Yeah, why not?
Let's get in there, let's podcast. Podcasting is about having some fun and talking.
Let's get some guests.
And so we were trying to take a look at a movie that we could all talk about, something that was kind of interesting to us all. And we went through just the doom scroll of finding something on Prime and Netflix and everything like that. And we stumbled upon Evil Dead 2. And we realized this is a weirdly special film for all of us.
Yeah.
Meredith, do you want to talk about us and Evil Dead?
Yeah, actually, Evil Dead 2 specifically was the first movie that you ever showed me.
That is correct, yes.
Yeah.
At the time, it was my favorite film. Now it is, it's still one of my favorite movies. If not, it's certainly top three still today.
Yeah, you had to show me this movie. From the very moment we talked.
I was like, you need to watch it. There will be a line in your life that you can draw from before you saw Evil Dead 2 to your life becoming amazing.
I think that was your girlfriend test.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, it really was. Like, if you didn't like that movie, you're just like, it's all right. I was like, well, I better be hitting the dusted trail. But that's not how it turned out. No. And now, you guys are also, you have a little thing with Evil Dead 2 as well.
Yep.
Yeah, that was the first movie I showed you when you came over.
Yep, because we had streamed the first one together.
I really don't know why I put it on, to be honest. I mean, it's just a good movie. It's a good watch.
Yeah, it is. It's just it's a fun movie, and I think if somebody can't vibe with it, I think that's when you have to be a little bit worried.
Yeah.
That is this person my speed? Like, is there just movies that she's just like, this is stupid. I don't care for this.
She sat through it and didn't look at me with disgust towards the end, so I think it worked out.
Yeah. I've never seen it before. It was a new film to me.
Yeah, and I think it's a really different experience, I think, than a lot of other horror movies, because it is sillier than most horror movies that I can really think of.
Yeah.
And I really mean silly. I think that's the main takeaway from Evil Dead 2.
But it's got so much heart.
It does.
It really does.
I think this level of gore combined with this Three Stooges comedy and just Sam Raimi finding himself as a director, I think, makes for this really impressive combo, combined with Bruce Campbell physically going all out, kicking his own ass multiple times and having it look amazing on screen.
You see, I always thought the first movie, they were actually trying to take a serious stab at horror.
Yeah.
Like, to try to be serious, but it just came across so not seriously scary.
And that's exactly what happened.
And then they just ran with it in the second one.
And the thing about it is stumbling upon, like, you know, you call that camp. You know, stumbling upon good camp is difficult, because people try to make intentionally cheesy and bad movies, and they usually just end up as forgettable kind of schlock, or, you know, maybe something you can kind of smile through. But, like, something that's truly campy, like Evil Dead or like early John Waters movies and things like that, you know, there's an appeal to them that's going to last forever, because not a lot of movies are really like that.
No.
You know, and this thing that someone shot for the moon and missed so fucking hard, you know. This movie, there's another one that I enjoy, and hopefully one day we'll get to see Manos, Hands of Fate.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst movies ever, and you know, that's not a guy trying to make a bad movie. He shot for it, and he missed so fucking hard. The same thing, I feel like I spit in your grave. Like, that guy tried to make a really dramatic film about rape and what it means.
No, I've seen that movie.
He made an exploitation movie instead. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Okay, there's a couple sequels, and the reboot has, I think, like three sequels.
Karen, I would not recommend you watch
them. They're rape revenge movies.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they're rape revenge movies.
Yeah, and they're hardcore.
Yeah. I mean, if you're down with that kind of thing, then sure. But
they don't pull their punches?
No.
Oh. Oof.
No.
I'm just saying, there are multiple dicks cut off in the franchise.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Hey. Hard can.
I mean, she gets her revenge. I mean, she does.
That's a good movie.
That is a good film.
Really good movie.
Yeah.
Four years ago, in this quiet forest, in this cozy cabin, something happened. Something so frightening. Something so deadly. something so evil. We pray.
So as always, I get into a little history about the film before we really start talking about it. And obviously, Evil Dead 2 is the sequel to Evil Dead. But between this movie and the first one, Sam Raimi made a film called Crime Wave. And his pitch to the studio was, I want to make like a living Looney Tunes movie. Like live action, pure cartoon action. And you can watch Evil Dead 2 and you can see that kind of cartoon idea throughout it. And the movie was plagued by a ton of studio interference. They didn't trust, you know, a young director, which he really was. He'd only made The Evil Dead, so they didn't trust him at all. And they interfered a lot, and the movie ended up pretty much as a disaster. And I enjoy it because I enjoy watching talented filmmakers miss, because I think that's very interesting, especially where you see where they're going to go. I'm also kind of fascinated by tales of studio interference. A movie that I hate but have watched many times is Guillermo del Toro's Mimic. And Guillermo del Toro is a great director.
Yes.
One of the best.
My favorite. And well, Mimic, one of my favorites.
Mimic is pretty crappy.
Yeah.
But it is plagued by Weinstein interference. They absolutely thought nothing of Guillermo del Toro and second-guessed him at every step, which really... Yeah, and now, of course, you know, that's a movie you wonder, had they not completely messed that up, like what it could have been. But, you know, that's just sort of how studios do things. Mm-hmm. Those guys can't help but think, like, I can fix this movie. Not this guy who's trained for it. Not these writers. Me, this producer who doesn't know jack shit about filmmaking. I'm going to fix this movie from the sidelines.
Hell yeah.
And it ruins a lot of things. And anyway, that's what happened to Sam Raimi's second movie, and that's what led them into the production of Evil Dead 2. They had to run back to the franchise. And listen, there's a lot of filmmakers who had to do it, and it worked out pretty well for Raimi, because this is a much better film than the original.
Was it the guy that wrote the film for Terminator? It was just like that, too. He had a rocky start, living out of his garage.
Yeah.
And it said that he had... his mom was sending him Burger King coupons.
Yeah.
And, I mean, look at that franchise. It blew up.
Yeah. He put everything on the line on that one. I mean, he was, you know, doing truck driving jobs when not doing film jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he could to just kind of stay, because even then living in LA was expensive, and it all worked out, you know?
Yeah.
He was a wild man and crazy, but, you know, he was almost practically a slave driver, but, you know, it all worked out. Meredith, is there any facts on Evil Dead 2?
Yeah, but you know what? I think we ought to talk about one little thing before that. I think if you want to give us a little shout out, tell us how we're doing in life.
Dial 1-800.
In podcast.
Gritty Reboot.
You can go ahead and email us at Gmail, grittyrebootcast@gmail.com.
Just email Gmail.
Email
and
Gmail.
Just make it the subject line, Gritty Reboot Podcast, and they'll send it to the right place.
Yeah.
That's not how that works at all.
No.
Now, if you're looking for a more modern way to get a hold of us, you can just simply search Gritty Reboot on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube.
Yep.
And that'll get a hold of us.
But I do have some pretty good facts.
All right. She led into the social media, and that is such an achievement. She really, because sometimes we do this like right before we close the damn show.
Yeah, we remember at the last
possible. The last possible second.
All right. Stephen King was such a huge fan of The Evil Dead that he convinced producer Dino De Laurentiis over dinner, who was the producing King's Maximum Overdrive at the time, to have his production company, DEG, finance Evil Dead 2.
So Stephen King is instrumental in the career and of Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. He is just at a random film festival in Chicago, and he sees The Evil Dead, and he's blown away by it. He just absolutely loves it and gives them a great quote, and they plaster that quote everywhere on the poster that Stephen King loved the movie. And that's what really got the doors open for them and put them as a movie that people wanted to see and wanted to be rented. It was all because of Stephen King's endorsement. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he really helped launch them. Without them, who knows what happens. But he dug the movie.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Yeah. But I got senses of that sort of like Stephen King feel. It was not in the first one.
Do you not like the first one?
I can't rewatch it.
Well, you know, if you think about it, taken seriously, it is a lot like a King story. You know,
yeah.
Friends going to a cabin, them turning on each other by some ancient evil, they accidentally wake up. I can see that as a king story.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to get the king cliches and everything like that. You're going to get every female's character's breast described perfectly for some reason. One of my favorites.
Isn't Stephen King into some weird shit, though?
He is.
Like, It, the original book, like, when he wrote it, he wrote about kids, like, having sex together.
He did.
So
he
saw the rape scene in that movie, Evil Dead, with the tree. Maybe he was like, oh, yeah, this is it.
That's the thing about King. He just wants to shock you every now
and then. Yeah, a little bit.
Which I appreciate, because we covered Firestarter last year, and I read the book, and one of my favorite passages in it is the father of the Firestarter can read people's minds. That's why I'm putting my hand to my temple to indicate that I'm reading your mind. But he's just doing this randomly as he's going through a bunch of tests. And then out of nowhere, Stephen King drops, the man who drew blood was a handsome gentleman, but no one knew that he had a corpse under his bed that he had sex with nightly.
Jesus.
For no reason. He just throws that in there and just walks away from that fact. Absolutely. We never meet this character again. We never see the corpse. She's not important to the story at all. But it's just what King does.
Just a little nugget of shit.
Yeah.
In there.
He just likes to shock every now and then. Yeah. If you've ever seen Sleepwalkers, he has nothing but shock in the movie. It's like incest and cat kills.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some serious undertones. I've never seen
it. A man is killed with a corn cob in that film. I'm not even kidding. Yeah.
That is impressive.
It might be Ron Perlman, I think, actually.
Although the cabin is supposed to be the same as the one from Evil Dead, that movie was shot in Morristown, Tennessee. The sequel filmed nearly 270 miles to the east in Wadesboro, North Carolina. Most of the film was shot on set built inside the gymnasium of Wadesboro J.R. Faison Junior High School. Financier Dino De Laurentiis had originally offered his studio in Wilmington, but director Sam Raimi chose Wadesboro, a three-hour drive, fearing that being so close to Dino De Laurentiis' office would lead to a studio interference.
Dino De Laurentiis is sort of a legendary producer.
Yeah.
In positive and negative ways. But I had seen a lot of the behind-the-scenes footage where they were in a gymnasium shooting this movie in an incredibly hot environment. There is, if you watch the scenes where the Evil Dead is following Bruce Campbell through the house, you know, that whole thing, you can see the top of the set. You can see the top of the gym. If you look, yeah.
I would have never guessed that they were in a gym.
Yeah, because there's no roof on a set because you got to put lights there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you know, Raimi was moving so quick, he was like, don't worry about it, nobody will ever see it. And it's true, nobody would, because you're looking at what you're supposed to be looking at, Bruce Campbell running for his life. You only notice it when you watch the movie a dozen times on DVD and Blu-ray. But that is one of the things about it. But it was brutally hot. There's a scene later in the movie where the director's brother, Ted Raimi, he's playing Henrietta in the basement, the monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Late in the movie, he is kind of floating in the air, and he turns his head, and there's this white fluid that comes out his ear. That is not an effect. That is the sweat pouring out of his suit because he got tipped over a little too much.
Oh.
Yeah. It was a truly awful environment to shoot in.
Well, yeah.
I'm reading from Google that it's a requel.
Technically, yeah. I guess we should talk about that.
That's true.
Right now.
That's true.
The movie does begin with the same exact intro that the first film has because they were unable to secure the footage from the original movie.
Yeah.
They weren't able to get that recap footage, basically, to start the second movie where they wanted to. So they were just like, well, screw it. We'll just reshoot the first movie in like 15 minutes. And that's what it is. That's why Linda shows back up again, dies again, and, you know, there's no extra other people, but they needed to, either way, he was going to go back to the cabin. So that's the one thing I love, that Bruce Campbell's like, no, he doesn't go back to the cabin in this movie, but yes, Ash is completely stupid enough to go back to the cabin anyway. Which he doesn't.
And you know, in the original version of the script, there was a scene where the characters smoke weed when they first listened to the tape, but I guess they got cut out of that.
I remember I listened to the commentary on that one. It's really funny, too, because the takes were just gibberish. Like, they thought they were
actually really high.
Yeah, they thought they were, like, improv masters, and, like, Raimi showed them the footage. Like, you guys didn't say anything that was funny or get the plot across at all. You just rambled for 15 minutes. And back then, you know, a reel is only about 13 minutes. That's all that's on a reel of film. That's all you get. That's all you get. So, and they might have had, like, maybe two or three of those a night.
Jeez.
Yeah. You forget now. You just roll an SD card or a hard drive as long as you want. It doesn't really matter. 4K uncompressed, but that's 16 millimeter. Like every shot had to count because not only do you have a limited amount, it costs money to process and develop that.
Jeez.
Yeah, yeah. The filmmaking on that level is quite expensive, even like a low budget film. Now, digital, I mean, anybody can shoot something on an iPhone.
So somebody like Stanley Kubrick would have used a ton.
Millions of dollars were wasted on Stanley Kubrick doing 70 takes for people picking up a pen off a table. I watched the story about Sidney Pollack. He's another filmmaker. He's in Eyes Wide Shut. As I said, he's a director. So he, you know, he's like, okay, I've never worked with Kubrick before. This would be kind of interesting. So he goes on the very first day to work on Eyes Wide Shut, and he does one scene, and Kubrick does five takes, and that's it. He does the one line. He's like, oh, this is bullshit. The next day, the first shot they have to do is him grabbing a pool ball and rolling it across the table. Kubrick made him do it 97 times. 97. And he was like, what? Why do we need 97 times? He was like, Sidney, you're a director. Don't you want it perfect? And that's just how it is. Yeah, there's a lot of directors. David Fincher, he does a ton of takes as well. It's just wild. And now, I mean, Fincher, that's why he works digital, so he doesn't have to answer to anybody. He can do whatever he wants. But like Kubrick wasted so much money doing hundreds of takes.
The large demonic head Ash battles in the climax of the film, which the crew nicknamed the Rotten Apple Head, was too large and cumbersome for the crew to carry back to California. So it went left in North Carolina and soon disappeared. Its whereabouts were unknown for a number of years until it was found in a Halloween haunted house attraction just outside the original shooting location of Wadesboro, North Carolina.
So I wonder who just held on to that thing for like 15
years. Who stole it?
Yeah, just in their basement.
Yeah, who stole it?
Yeah, you had to have like a pretty big truck to freaking get that thing out and like drive down the road with it without being seen.
And also, they don't know what it is. Like, they don't know it's from an iconic movie. The movie hasn't been released yet. It's just hanging out there while they're finishing the movie. They're like, yeah, we should probably hang on to this thing.
This is the head at the end of the movie.
Yeah, the one that
goes on and he shoots the...
No, I think the big one, right?
The okay.
Yeah, the one he puts the chainsaw on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the tree thing.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't get away with that.
No.
That'd be kind of hard to hide.
Yeah.
It's very creepy looking, but Jesus.
Yeah.
I was thinking of the head from...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like they.
Oh, the one that bit the hand.
No.
He's talking to Henrietta's head.
Chimpanzee flying lady.
Long neck.
Oh, yeah. That thing. Yeah. Okay.
Swallow this. Just like that, we're going to recap the entire film that way.
Yeah. Bruce Campbell completely improvised a scene where he fights his possessed hand in the kitchen of the cabin.
So good.
Sam Raimi praised his performance and used the first take for the film.
Yeah, I would too.
First fucking take.
So that sort of thing I talk about is trying to get it perfect. And that's Raimi was so impressed, he nailed it. Right there, and he probably had him do another couple for safety, but he was like, no, we got it.
It's like watching a real life cartoon, like it's him hitting himself with, you know, plates and bowls and then pulling himself with his own hand.
Campbell is the perfect actor for this.
Yes.
He has the physicality at that age to do a lot of things. It's really impressive, like him flipping himself over. I mean, he really does make it look like he is kicking his own ass.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very impressive, you know. As limited as he can be in other ways, like in this movie, he's just brilliant. No, nobody else could pull this off. What he does in this movie, he has such a unique skill set that is put together perfectly by what Raimi has him do.
The only time I've ever seen anybody in a movie kick their own ass equally or better than Bruce Campbell would have to be Jim Carrey.
I was just thinking that
in the bathroom,
kicking
my ass. Do you mind?
The sexy, surly Bobby Joe was inspired by Holly Hunter, who was the housemaid of Sam Raimi's in the early 80s, along with Joe Cohen and Frances McDormand.
So, yeah.
What? But to be she a fly out. On the wall.
Very random.
The Cohen brothers and Sam Raimi, Holly Hunter, and Frances McDormand all lived together at some point.
That's such a weird combination.
On the commentary track to this movie, Sam Raimi told a story where Holly Hunter said she was always in like a baggy shirt and like sweatpants or like jeans. And she came down in a dress and said, oh, Holly, you look nice today. It's cool. You look great. And she was like, fuck you, Sam. I'm playing a hooker today.
One particular incident inspired the character. Hunter was auditioning for a hooker part and was unusually made up and wearing a sexy short skirted outfit. She became angry at Raimi when he somewhat leered at her. Raimi pulled for Hunter to play the part, but producers wanted someone sexier.
So this is the chick that was with this is the Bobby Joe.
Bobby Joe!
The one where you're like, why is she with that guy?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe he was packing.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He had something he's hiding.
Yeah.
That's the only explanation.
9 inches of deadite down there.
Yeah.
Got he had his own Necronomicon. Necronomicock. It had to be said.
Wow.
You're welcome.
After watching the final cut of the film, producer Dino De Laurentiis knew for certain the film would get an X rating from the MPAA due to the high amount of violence and gore.
Mm.
However, Sam Raimi argued if the film would be recut to secure an R rating, he would only be around an hour long. Since De Laurentiis wasn't allowed to release an unrelated film, he ultimately decided to pseudonymously credit his production company under the name Rosebud Releasing Corporation.
That's the Rosebud opening up at the start of the movie. They shot that in the parking lot of De Laurentiis' studio. Like literally like a couple days before the film was like ready to print. They just like went outside, shot that, took it to a developer, got it done, and threw it right in the movie, and it was good.
Yeah, and that's how he got around the MPAA.
That was why they did
the green blood. Yeah, the green
and black inserted.
Blood, a lot of bile.
Yeah.
Now that was their thinking, is they could get around it, but it didn't work. So.
And then they went real light with the, rapiness with the trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even though I don't know if that would have made a difference.
Very suggestive, but we don't know. Yeah. Did she get 8 or?
Torn.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, it's left ambiguous, thankfully.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Last fact I have. Ash Bruce Campbell drives the same 1973 Oldsmobile Delta 88 as the original film. The car was owned by Sam Raimi at the time, originally bought by Raimi's father for the family when Sam was 14.
Yeah, so like I said, it is literally his family car. And that's why it was the Evil Dead, because if it got messed up, it was kind of whatever.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, it's my dad's old car, so.
They definitely destroyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, and they got it repaired so they could use it again. I don't know if it's in Crime Wave. I'm pretty sure that it is.
Yeah.
But I've only seen Crime Wave the one time. So that's the only one I can't vouch for. And I know it's not in Quick and the Dead because it wouldn't make any sense if it was in a Western movie. But yeah, it is in every one of his movies, so.
Yeah.
Easter egg. Definite Easter egg.
Yeah, it's even in the Oz movie.
When you know about it, you just can't help but look for it.
Yeah.
Now I have to go back and watch the Multiverse of Madness.
Yep.
It's in that. Yeah, it's in that.
I'm going to go watch it now.
As is Bruce Campbell as the pizza popper or something. I forget what he plays in that. But it was good to see him in the MCU.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
So what is everybody's favorite part of this movie? Okay.
It's a rough one.
And I'll tell you mine. Mine is when the girlfriend is dancing.
Yes.
And she makes that. Ah!
Yeah, I think that is one of the biggest laughs in the movie.
Yeah.
I got lucky enough like 15 years ago when we had a theater, and I just forgot the name of it, opened downtown. And it's the one that Oswald ran into after he shot the president. And they reopened it. And one of the first movies they showed was Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. And it was great to see them with an audience because
We didn't get that.
Yeah, you only see these movies by yourself at home, maybe with a couple of friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and that's the way we experience it. So it was very cool to watch this movie with an audience reacting to every moment of it. And that was the biggest laugh in the movie. The second it happens, everybody just, and most people awed along with her. So and it was a great little moment. It was weirdly kind of like Rocky Horror. People knew all the lines.
Yeah.
I know for some people that might seem like a nightmare theater experience, but it was such a communal thing that we were all having just a great time with this movie.
I'd have to say my favorite, or at least it stands out to me, is just because it's stupid. When he becomes a deadite and he's messing with him, and then he snaps out of it just randomly because he's reminded of his old dead girlfriend or whatever.
Mm. Yeah.
And the very annoying screaming girl, he's fighting with her, and then he's like, I'm all right. And he just pauses for a minute up against the wall, and you just see a random axe right next to his head. He's like, I'm all right. It's like,
are you hearing me? Yeah, that's probably the second biggest laugh in the movie.
Yeah.
Is when she's
just like, random axe.
Yeah, because he literally takes a deep breath to relax, and then phew, it comes right at him.
Yeah.
Aaron?
I mean, I've seen it a few times now, and I think what still like gets me is the railroad. You know, he gets there, and then that scene's gone, and you get to the next one. We were watching it, and you commented about, what is he doing there with the signs and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
And you read it. Pans over with the light going up to the railroad, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of broken now. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but that just is the only scene that I love every time I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's just like the weird, crooked ways of the railroad, and it's so...
It's like a hand showing up like
that. Yeah, that's the
like it's gone.
Yeah. I like the way it is here as opposed to like in the original movie where they can't pass. It's also done really well in the reboot. Because it's just the water is rushing in and it blows the bridge away. So it's a very realistic one.
Yeah.
As opposed to this one being very supernatural. So I think that's sort of interesting.
I don't remember in the movie if they even showed anything happening to it. It feels like it was just inserted like, oh, hey, by the way, the bridge is
it's
gone.
Just gone. It's
they
just
can't
gone.
Leave. Because in the first movie, they were like actively trying to leave in the car.
Yeah.
And in this one, it was like, meh.
Well, that's part of like remaking the first movie in 15
right.
minutes.
Kind of
yeah, you can stretch that
shit
out in the first movie. You just got to get through those ideas.
Yeah.
So for myself, obviously, the main scene that sticks with me is the groovy scene. I think it sort of is everything that Sam Raimi is in just one sequence. Quick cuts, these weird camera moves that make these kind of noises, that gives the scene this weird kind of energy. And then it ends on this tongue-in-cheek joke of, like, this guy ready to kick some ass finally. The dumbest person you know is finally ready to kick some ass.
Yep.
Groovy. And, I mean, it's great. The other one I have to mention is when he's going insane in the house and he starts, like, going up and down.
The lamp.
As all the
lamp and the clock.
The lamp and all the everything in the house has come alive and laughing at him.
Yeah.
Like, him looking at the camera like, like his nuts maniacal laugh. It's just fantastic. That was the menu to the DVD back in the day. It always used to make me smile that it just was him laughing for a puffed up Evil Dead 2.
Hmm.
Yeah. I like the gore in this movie too.
Yeah.
Even though the blood looks like...
You get a little lazy with the blood.
Water.
Pouring out.
Waterish.
Watery blood.
Yeah.
I think this is the first movie by K&B. And that is the legendary effects house. They would eventually basically be main producers on The Walking Dead. Greg Nicotero, he was the lead, I believe, on this movie. He did most of the creature design and the effects work, and he ended up directing, I think, like a handful of Walking Dead episodes and was a producer on most of that show. Greg Nicotero was in Dusk Till Dawn. Like, he's in the scene with Tom Savini.
Okay.
In that, he's sitting right next to him. He's the guy who threatens him and he pulls the cock gun out on. Yeah, he pulls that knife on, he pulls in, and Greg Nicotero backs away. So, and now you think about it, you've probably seen he's been a zombie a lot.
Yes.
Yeah, so yes. You probably see him in a bunch of movies. We just watched Wishmaster the other day, he was in that. Yeah, he's a legendary horror guy, and this is where he got his start, so.
All right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And as a fact, I can't back up 100%, but I know K&B did work on it, and Nicotero was big on it. May not have been there first, but it was early for them.
Yeah,
I feel like we should have watched like all three. I have them backlogged in my brain for 1, 2, and I guess technically 3, Army of Darkness.
Yeah, I mean, it is 3. It is a third film, yeah.
Okay.
So it's a weird third movie. Universal said, we want a third Evil Dead film, but we don't want you to call it Evil Dead.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
Okay, yeah, because for most of the production, it was The Medieval Dead.
Really?
Yeah, which is a much better title than what they ended up working with, actually. And I think it was at the last second marketing was like, no, Medieval Dead is not going to work. And Raimi's point was like, but if we don't name it The Medieval Dead, no one's going to know it's an Evil Dead movie. If it's just called Army of Darkness. And I can remember I was watching, I think like 2020 on a Friday night as a young kid. And I saw the trailer come on for Army of Darkness. And my mom told me, you need to go to bed right now. Turn the TV off. And I was grabbed by this trailer for Army of Darkness. And I stared at that TV like, wow, like this guy's fighting zombies. That's cool. I'd never seen something like that in a big movie. And I was so entranced by it. I had not noticed that my mom came into the room and turned my TV off for me. And I wasn't allowed to watch TV the rest of the weekend because I pushed my bedtime by a few minutes. But that was the first introduction I had to Bruce Campbell was that moment.
Well, mine in particular is from my dad. As random as it is, we used to watch it on VHS all the time. I know that movie well.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I watched it as a kid. It didn't bother me. Like, I guess Evil Dead 2 kind of bothered me when I was younger.
Because,
I don't know, it's a little more in your head, I guess.
Yeah.
Him going crazy. But Army of Darkness is just one big joke.
Yeah, it's pure fun.
It's a and they did B just movie. Play with everything, and it's and you know who doesn't want to see him wield a sword and
yeah, because it's an Evil Dead movie combined with a fantasy epic.
Yeah,
yeah, with a, well, like a 1950s style fantasy epic. Yeah. You know, it, and it works really well. Like Raimi directs the hell out of the movie. It's a ton of fun and it's tongue in cheek. I mean, literally, Duke Nukem's entire character is built off the.
That's
dumb
what I'm saying.
Ass.
Like, yeah, you hear that and Ash Williams, Duke Nukem, you're like, oh, okay,
I see
where that, you're going there.
Yeah, and that's the one thing that I've always found really impressive is the movie flopped. And it had such a cultural impact on really everything. Like the fact is that Evil Dead, the franchise, is the most popular cult franchise there's ever been. It's where the fact you can't call it a cult anymore. You know, I mean, there's been multiple movies. There's been two reboots. There's a TV show. There's four or five video games. Yeah. None of them good, but they're out there.
Yeah.
There's an Xbox One that's okay, but I'm not getting into it. Hey, listen, I played the PlayStation 1 back in the day when I wanted to love it, and it was awful. So I did my time on that.
Just something endearing about The Evil Dead. I don't know. It's just one of those horror films where, to me, it just doesn't feel like a horror film. It's just a good film to watch. It's
comedy.
Yeah. It's comedy. Yeah. It's got a little bit. I mean, it's got gore in it, but it doesn't make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know what's going on, and it's just fun to watch.
Well, I quote this a lot with Roger Ebert. He said, your emotions will never lie to you. And I think Evil Dead is a movie that almost brings such pure joy.
Yeah.
For
yeah.
what it is. It's a horror movie. It's a comedy. It just really, it's incredibly fun. And I can't think of a lot of movies that deliver what it does. It doesn't take itself seriously one bit and barely takes a breath. I mean, the movie's just motion, 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 motion.
Yeah, it captivates the entire time.
Yeah, it's just moving with any even crazy sound effects. And people might call the sound effects over the top, but it fits right into the movie.
Yeah, it fits right into
the movie. Like, there's a scene in there where his hand gets possessed, and he pushes his hand on the ground, and it sounds like a nuclear explosion.
Yeah.
Those little moments like that, I think, just add to the otherworldly feel of the movie, this over-the-top cartoonish nature. And as I said, it equals probably one of the most joyful cinematic experiences I think you could really have.
Yeah. Yeah. I always enjoyed the camera shots where they're those long camera shots where they're chasing, chasing them through the forest. And they stuck with that through the entire
series. That's the hallmark of the franchise.
You don't really see that anywhere else. It's just iconic to me. Like when I see that, I think, oh, Evil Dead.
It's kind of weird because for a long time you just called that kind of a Raimi cam,
right?
Is what you and of course now it lives beyond him. I know he produces the franchise still, which is probably why it's been in a high quality. Mm-hmm. He still has a hand on it, but he hasn't directed one of the movies since Army of Darkness. So, but still, you see that shot persist, and it is the signature shot. And I think the second you see it, you know exactly. You hear that sound, it's Evil Dead.
Yeah, no, like the shot when they're in Evil Dead 2 in the house, and he's chasing him through the house. And it's just you're literally right behind him the whole way in the entire house, and it's one fluid shot, and they're going in between the walls and outside, and it's just crazy. Like,
yeah, and you think about the physical effort it takes, not just Bruce Campbell maneuvering through all that perfectly. Yeah. Like, he doesn't hit the wall badly and bounce off. Like, he has to get through all that, continue to act. But also, the camera guy's got to keep that thing steady in the same tight spots and everything like that, and keep the focus. Because
I wish people could have seen you do that.
But,
feet movement in the hands.
Yeah, because I mean that's how you do it. You have to keep your feet moving pretty quickly like that, and you got to go. But that's the thing. I look at that, and I'm like, man, keeping the focus on that would have been pretty tough.
Yeah,
because it's dark in there, and that's it's
tight quarters.
It's impressive for the budget that they had. I think it's like a $2.5-3 million movie, and what they pull out, really competed with any horror film that Hollywood was producing really at the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, much better. And like I said, the movie ended up doing pretty well, obviously, at the box office. And, it certainly made an impact and continued the franchise. So I think that probably the thing that I like is how universal these movies are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, over time, like, everybody recognizes the Ash character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's weird that it took, 30 plus years. But I think he's certainly up there with... Jason, Dracula, and Freddy, and those kind of icons like that. Mm-hmm. You see Ash, and you're like, oh, those are those Evil Dead movies. So I think people really understand that more than the Deadite
is
the franchise. That's not really what it
is. That's Bruce Campbell to me.
Yeah,
That's when I see Bruce Campbell, I think Evil Dead. When I see him in other films, it's just like, meh. Evil Dead vibes, you know, fast talking one-liners, and
he's the last B movie star.
Yeah,
he's the last one.
So
of those.
Endearing,
you know, because that's not how the system works anymore. We don't have B movies.
No, not really.
You know, I mean, we barely have independent movies. You know, we really do. You know, those independent movies are produced by A24, a giant fucking faceless corporation.
Oh yeah,
that people think is like an art house.
Yeah,
they just happen to buy really quality films. That's all.
Yeah.
So if I might ask. Who directed the new Evil Dead movies then?
The director of the first one was Fede Alvarez, I believe. And he did the last Alien film. He did Don't Breathe.
That makes sense.
He did an underrated one. I really like Crawl. I think he did that.
Yeah.
I think he did
Crawl.
Yeah, that's the one with the alligator in the chasing the swimmer.
Oh, okay.
In the basement.
Yeah.
Despite my pitch right there, it's actually quite good. Yeah, listen, if you had to fight an alligator during a flood and you were trapped in a basement,
I take
it
this
would be
is
pretty harrowing.
A B movie you're talking about?
Yeah, to some extent. Yeah, I mean, it came out in theaters, so you know, there's no real B movie, but I mean, I think it was pretty good, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It turned out better than something like The Shallows,
which
is the same concept, except I think there's not as much the movie's dedicated to how pretty Blake Lively is. Like, there's so much of The Shallows that's dedicated to, like, just looking at Blake Lively. Like, it really is. There's so many leering shots on her, and I'm like, I mean, listen, she's attractive. I get it, but good God, you have to move on to other things.
They knew what they were doing.
It's a horror movie.
Yeah, yeah. And we just watched Anora the other day, and Sean Baker, director of that, huge pervert, but he moved on and told that story after showing some boobs, right?
Yeah, of course.
There's some titties in there.
Tasty. No, I was laughing the other day because somebody was trying to expose him. Like, he follows all these OnlyFans models. I'm like, have you seen his movies? That guy's clearly a pervert. Yeah, of course he follows OnlyFans models.
It makes sense. You know, you're saying that the original title was Medieval Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Now it clicks.
Yeah.
Because there's so many things that in the first movie, it just being titled Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense with any of the stuff, the history, how there's like different hieroglyphs on these books and it's the Book of the Dead. That would make sense if it was medieval, because then you could connect that with the history that goes back. And for me, my brain works, well, how does this all tie in together?
Yeah, you don't really need to know, like, the lore of the Evil Dead to, like, get it. Like, you could just pick up Evil Dead. You sit down and watch Evil Dead 2, like I did when we first met.
Yeah.
Like, this is just fun to watch. I don't need to know what a Deadeye is or what the Necronomicon is or any of that. You're just kind of along for the ride.
But for someone who's just experiencing the titles of Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2, and then you see Army of Darkness, none of it makes sense. I didn't know they were connected. I didn't know
Bruce
any
Campbell,
of the...
really. And just the shallow lore behind it, I guess, if you were really going
in depth. Yeah, because if you're watching Army of Darkness, the style of zombie changes completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they're not the same at all.
Once again, Evil Dead 2 is a requel.
Right.
So technically... He Sam Raimi is just redoing the first movie. He's just doing it the way he wanted it, with the budget that he wanted.
Yeah.
Okay, so you could start from the Evil Dead 2, technically.
Yeah.
Technically, you could cut out the first movie.
You could. You really could.
I think you deny yourself something. Yeah, but I would cut it out narratively.
Yeah. I would started with the first one, and then went to the second one. For anybody, like, if you've never seen it, it is a little confusing because you're like, wait, didn't I just watch this?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you're like, oh, that's pretty similar, but.
I do appreciate how the movie has that kind of confusing element, but it rarely gets questioned.
Yeah.
People just kind of accept it at face value. They're like, yeah, he went back, I guess. Makes sense. And he found another girl named Linda. Sure. That tracks. You know, and the thing about it is, like you mentioned, the Necronomicon, and I think that's a good job that the reboots have done, is exploring a little bit more of that. Like, you don't need all that backstory, like you just said. You can just see from this book that, obviously, you probably shouldn't open it. And like the reboot, I think, does a great job with it. It's like in a trash bag and surrounded by barbed wire. And it even has a note on it that says, do not read this book. And the guy opens it anyway, because honestly, if I saw a book, then I'd be like, what the fuck's in this book, huh?
Yeah.
You know, because that'd be the worst thing you could put on to make me read it. You can say, like, this book's about shit eating. Like, no, that's all right. We'll just put that back.
Okay. So I was wondering if the Necronomicon actually originated from the Evil Dead, but it's
Lovecraft.
Yeah, Lovecraft. I would have never guessed. Well, it's Lovecraft. It's a little weird.
Lovecraft is the most influential horror author of all time. Not Arthur. He wasn't named Arthur.
Yeah, he's a little out there, but he made some good shit.
Yeah, Lovecraft really wrote some great. He was a terrible racist and a really bad person. Mm-hmm. But seriously, if you read his work, he's just like, the black man was clearly more of a monkey than a human. Like, literally, that's his prose. I'm barely sugarcoating it, except I'm not using slurs. So that's pretty much how he referred to people. He was a hateful man, but he wrote great horror fiction. Oh, Stephen King is the only person more important in horror literature than H.P. Lovecraft. Yeah. Not even Bram Stoker really matters. I mean, Dracula's okay.
Yeah.
Like Dracula.
I feel like they've put it into the ground and are just...
Hey, that's our big feature we're going to do later in the year is like 8 episodes about different Dracula reboots.
Nosferatu. Yeah. We just did Nosferatu.
Yeah, we just watched it.
I haven't seen it yet. I've been debating if I
should. You gotta go old school first, then new.
Yeah, we watched the 1922 version, and then we watched the 1978 version.
I heard it was pretty faithful to the source material.
It is, and then obviously we watched the new one. I ended up enjoying the 1978 version the most.
Yeah.
I'm a little weird. But the new one, I wasn't enthralled with. Probably because I think Eggers is such an amazing director and I expected like a 10 out of 10 and it's like a 9 and I'm disappointed by that. So I ended up giving it an 8, I think. But
I think I gave it a 6.
I gave it a 6. I was a little higher on it just because of his craftsmanship. But because I wasn't blown away by it, I was kind of disappointed. And then you sort of have to gauge like, do I really want to be critical of a movie if I'm blown away by, if I'm disappointed by my own expectations for it, you know? Like, is that something I can really judge a film for? That I was like, oh, I thought it'd be more amazing than it's just really great? You know, like...
Set the bar high.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the worst thing that happened to Robert Eggers is his first movie was The Witch. Probably one of the finest films I've ever seen.
I know.
Have you guys seen The Witch?
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I have not.
Oh, it's a great man. You are missing out.
Was it the first time I watched it? Confused. Second time I watched it? Yes. Hell yes.
Yes.
Like... Very end. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with it.
I don't know. You might like it.
Why do you say that? What's it about?
Is he the same guy who directs, like, Midsommar?
No, that's Ari Aster. That's Ari Aster. Ari Aster did Midsommar and Hereditary. Robert Eggers did The Witch, The Lighthouse, The Northman.
The Northman.
Okay.
God. The Northman, yeah.
You didn't like it?
Yeah.
You didn't
like it?
It was just... We didn't finish it.
I actually wanted to see how far it would go.
I'm playing Skyrim on acid, and it's just like way turned up to like 10.
I liked it.
I mean, yeah, I guess you could be into it, but it just wasn't for me. I was just like, I can't finish this. We didn't finish it.
You might not like it.
I got like 3/4 of it. I mean, visually it looks amazing, but it's like, what's going on here? Like, I'm so lost.
The Witch didn't feel that long. The Northman or Northman.
I was shocked that my dad liked The Northman, and my dad is the most... normal movie person there ever is. Like, he likes old westerns, and he was like, "That was a pretty good movie." I was like, "You like that movie?" I was like, "That's one of the most artistic directors in Hollywood. I didn't think you'd really dig that." And he's like, "Oh yeah, with the mom betraying him, that was great. My dad really dug the hell out of that movie." you never know. Or he liked the other one too, Rebel Ridge. That was the other one I recommended. He really loved.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, Rebel Ridge. I think that was a great movie. That's gonna be on my top 5.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, it's a movie. It felt like a show, but it ran so fluidly together. Sick.
I don't know anything about that either.
It's a Netflix show.
Oh, that's why. Okay.
Movie.
Netflix original?
Yeah, it's a Netflix original. Yeah.
Hey, don't be knocking some of those shows.
Yeah, have you seen Gerald's Game?
What is it?
Gerald's Game?
No.
It's a Stephen King.
Yeah, Gerald's Game might be the strongest.
This is another King Netflix adaptation.
Yeah. This is a Netflix.
That's Mike Flanagan, one of the other top horror
directors. He's one of my favorite directors.
Okay.
Yeah, Flanagan, he did The Impossible, in my opinion. He made a sequel to Stanley Kubrick's The Shining, and he adapted Stephen King's sequel to The Shining as one, which is particularly impressive.
Dr. Sleep?
Dr. Sleep, yes.
I loved it. Oh,
I did too.
Adored it. I wish they did more.
Yeah, the thing about it is, like, Kubrick's version of The Shining and King's version couldn't be more different, to be perfectly honest. Kubrick's version is about a family going insane together, and Stephen King's version is about a man struggling with alcoholism. They are the same story with completely different themes throughout them. And so while they might both feature a guy going kind of crazy and stalking people in the house, they are carried out very differently. And that's what makes the fact that he pulled a sequel to both off really impressive.
Yeah.
If you ever get a chance, read the book, The Shining. Very different experience.
Okay.
One of the few King books I would really recommend anybody read. I think the film version is very different than what the book is. And
That's how I felt about it.
To some extent, Kubrick did a better job with the story if you're talking about scares.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're talking about scares, yes. But if you're talking about characters, the work King does is...
The creativity that you get from reading the book is more fantasy, and it feels more in that sense. But in the movie, I did not get that. It didn't come across to me.
Yeah, you can't really love the family in Kubrick's version as much as you can feel sorry for them when things turn. But like Jack Nicholson's character, and the name of him just escaped me. Does anybody remember the name of Jack Nicholson's character in The Shining?
Jack?
Jack Palance. No, Jack Palance is...
No, it's...
City Slickers. Jack McQuack. Jack McShining is his name.
I'm going to look it up.
You don't know his name is Jack Nicholson, right?
No, it's in the movie.
I believe his character name is Jack, but I don't remember what his... Yeah, she's going to find it.
Yes.
But the thing about it is, in the book, you really can feel for him. Like, you can't empathize with him because he's just a guy struggling with addiction, and a ghost takes advantage of that.
Jack Torrance.
Torrance, thank you.
See, I knew it was something.
I knew he had a last name, too.
You're close.
Yeah, because it's Danny Torrance. And in the Doctor Sleep, it's Danny.
I couldn't remember that last name to save the life. Right. Thank you for Google. That's exactly it. So,
well, what would everybody rate this movie, Evil Dead 2? I rate it an 8 out of 10.
It's a 10 for me. Absolutely, just a 10. I think it's a perfect,
perfect
piece of horror comedy. Yeah,
I will give this 100% a 10.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm the only asshole.
Yeah, you're the only. Yeah, you were like, I want to play it cool. I don't want everybody to think I love this movie now. I don't want to commit to this Evil Dead franchise.
Now I feel like I should come down a point.
Yeah.
Just cause, or half a point.
No. I give it an 8 because it's not a perfect movie. It has some continuity issues.
It does. The continuity schmontinuity.
Yeah, there's absolutely no continuity. But it is a fun movie, and...
You're entertained, right?
Yeah, I'm entertained. Yeah.
That's what it's supposed to do.
It's not that I don't like the movie. I love the movie, but, you know...
Visually, I mean, it's nice to look at. It keeps your attention. You're not bored.
I'm going to edit this into a clip of you hating Evil Dead 2.
I don't hate Evil Dead 2.
Evil Dead 2 is your Chloe Grace Moretz.
No, it's not.
She hates Chloe Grace
Moretz. I don't hate Chloe Grace Moretz.
If you had asked me the first time I watched the Evil Dead 2, I probably would have given it like a 6. Mm-hmm. But no, after rewatching it and seeing it and actually thinking of it as not a second movie, but actually just the first movie, it's a lot better. But it's also missing some of that nice raw material he had in Evil Dead.
That is true. I think there is always a level of rawness that could be missing from like a low-budget film to
its remake or its
sequel. But there's a lot more polish here. And there is much more good with that than the negatives that they lose. I think that far outweighs the positives doing this.
You know what? I changed my mind. I'm going to go to a 9.5 just because of the chimpanzee sound. Kind of take me out of it a little bit. I cannot think about anything.
And you don't like the girl screaming either.
Oh, yes. The annoying girl screaming. Yes.
They kept mocking her on the commentary.
Yes. Gosh, she's piercing voice. Okay, now it's a 9. Take another
now point. Now it's a 9. You just keep listing things, eventually it's going to be, you know what, 1.5.
I hate the film, but those are just things that are like, oh, God.
I'm getting them to my side.
It's Bobby Joe.
I don't remember the name of that lady that screams a lot. She's just Lady That Screams a Lot.
She's not really important to be named. She's
right?
Daughter of the important character who read the book.
She's that tries to kill Ash with an axe, randomly. Well, maybe not randomly, but...
Well, I mean, she had a reason. He did try to murder her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then...
However, he was not a monster anymore, clearly.
Dragging the hillbilly guy. Very
she
gingerly
was,
across
she was
the floor.
Trying to save him.
He's, you know, bleeding.
Yeah, but he's like, ow, you're hurting me. And she's like, shut up.
She's kind of impressive, though. She's lugging that big dude around like nothing.
And it's like one of the best comedic sequences. She's just torturing him, trying to get him out of the way. Only so he could be brutally murdered by her zombie mother.
Yeah.
That's right. They pull him down into the cellar.
I love her trying to.
All the blood comes out.
Still trying to pull him as the blood geyser is coming. Like, once you're hit with a wave of blood, you go and let go.
Yeah.
It's over. You go and let go.
Done at that point.
Okay. So, do you guys want to know how everybody else felt about these movies?
Oh, yeah. Shoot.
We got a 4.4 user review, an 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 7.7 out of 10 on IMDb.
Blasphemy.
And if you think that people love this movie, they did. but I managed to find somebody who didn't like this movie. This review is called Evil Dud 2.
Oh my.
He thought he was so clever.
Why, oh, why was this movie ever even made? As if the first Evil Dead movie wasn't bad enough, which it was, they, the filmmakers, decided to make a sequel. Actually, it's not even really fair to call it a sequel. It's more like a remake of the first than a sequel. I've heard this film described as a horror comedy, although I think if you find any humor in this movie, I'm willing to bet you must be under the age of 10. It's truly an insult to the intelligence of any person with half a brain and a total waste of life to watch.
Not only does he not like the movie, if you like the movie, you're a piece of shit.
I just can't believe this film has the following it does. It's quite remarkable, in my opinion.
I can't believe people enjoy fun.
Right.
What's the matter with
Who
these
wants
assholes?
To laugh, you know?
I think Sam Raimi should have stuck to making his Super 8 shorts in his backyard instead of directing Hollywood features. The guy is a hack. Yeah. Sorry, folks. It's true. God. I wouldn't even recommend watching it on television for free. It'd still be a waste of your time.
Jesus.
Wow, man. That is a ton of hate.
I told you I found somebody that didn't like this movie.
So you found someone who didn't like this movie. One of the things I was shocked by when I bought the DVD for the first time is it has a critical quote on the cover, and it's 3 stars by Roger Ebert, thumb up. And he gave a good review. His other half, Siskel, did not. But Roger Ebert, a legendary critic, is infamous for hating horror movies. But he really enjoyed Evil Dead 2, and I'm going to read his review right here. Roger Ebert says, Evil 2 Dead by Dawn is a comedy disguised as a blood-soaked shockerama. It looks specifically like a routine horror movie, a vomitorium designed to separate callow teenagers from their lunch. But look a little closer, and you'll realize the movie is a fairly sophisticated satire. Level 1 viewers will say it's in bad taste. Level 2 folks like myself will perceive it is about bad taste. The plot. Visitors to a cottage in the Michigan woods discover a rare copy of the Book of the Dead and accidentally invoke evil spirits. The spirits run amok, disemboweling and vivisecting their victims. The heroes battle manfully with their dread supernatural forces, but he is no match for the unspeakably vile creatures in the basement, in the woods, and behind every door. The story is told with wall-to-wall special effects. Skeletons dance in the moonlight, heads spin on the top of bodies, hands go berserk and start attacking their owners. After they are chopped off, they have a life of their own. Heads are clamped onto vices and squished, blood sprays all over everything, guts spill, slime spews. If nauseating images of horrific gore are not, as they say, your cup of tea, the odds are good you will not have a great time during The Evil Dead. On the other hand, if you know it's all special effects, and if you've seen a lot of other movies that have a sense of humor, you might have a great time at Evil Dead 2. I did. The movie devours ideas at such a rate that it begins to repeat itself toward the end, but the first 45 minutes have a kind of manic-inspired genius to them. Consider, for example, the scene where the hero severs his hand from his body, and the hand takes on a life of its own, attacking him. Leave out the blood and the gore in a few of the details, and this entire sequence builds like a tribute to the Three Stooges. Consider the scene where the hero attaches a chainsaw to what's left of his amputated arm. Disgusting, right? But director Sam Raimi approaches it as a sly jab at the way Robert De Niro armed himself in Taxi Driver. I'm not suggesting that Evil Dead 2 is fun merely because you can spot the references to the other films. It is because the violence and gore are carried to such an extreme that they stop being disgusting and become surrealistic. The movie's timing aims for comedy, not shocks, and the grubby, low-budget intensity of the film gives it a lovable quality that high-tech movies wouldn't have. There's one shot in the film that is some kind of masterpiece. There is a force out there in the woods. We never see it, but we see things from its point of view. In one long and very complex, unbroken point of view shot, the force roars through the woods, flattens everything, and crashes the cabin door, and roars through the room after room with invisible savagery, chasing the hero until, but I wouldn't dream of giving away the joke. 3 stars.
Okay, Roger. I can get behind that.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Ebert had a bad reputation for disliking horror movies, but he was just a critic. Some things stuck with him, some things didn't. He gave a 4-star review to Dawn of the Dead. He loved that movie. He was one of the early champions of that film. When a lot of critics sort of dismissed it, he was one of the first guys to be like, no, that was one of the best movies of the year. And now we recognize Dawn of the Dead as a true fucking classic.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a lot of movies like that Ebert was right on the forefront of. But, you know, as you get older, you know, movies made by another generation are going to feel a little out of place with you. So I think that's why a lot of like late 80s and 90s and O's movies he gave a bad review to that we have a good feeling of. Well, he was already an old man. You know, he doesn't understand where a lot of these new references and these new feelings from a new generation come. You know, these things that we just grew up with. And I think that's one of the things that's a bit unfair to him, but he certainly did love a number of horror flicks in his time. And this is one.
That's what kills me about the new ones, the new Evil Deads. It's just the charm is gone in the new ones. It's just gore.
I think it was a smart idea because I don't know if anybody else can do horror comedy without Sam Raimi being there and without Bruce Campbell.
Yeah.
I think without those two guys working together,
yeah.
I don't think you can achieve that same kind of tone. So I think being... tackling them as a bit more of a serious horror movie, I think was a pretty good idea. Because the concept of the Evil Dead can be sort of horrifying. So I think portraying it that way is not a bad idea.
It was more shock and awe.
Yeah.
Sure, in those movies.
And like I said, I do like both reboots, especially the last one. I think that was really strong, especially for its budget.
Yeah.
It was another lower budget film. And, you know, it felt like there was ingenuity behind it.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the things I appreciated. And it was clever at times, which is one of the things I always appreciate about a movie when... I can sort of smile and go like, huh, that was a good idea. I like that. That was fun. And a lot of movies don't give me that opportunity. They just give me things I've seen before over and over again.
The originals are definitely, they get me in the feels.
Yeah, yeah.
Member Barry's hardcore.
There's something really special about them. And I wonder how long the specialness of Evil Dead will last for generations. Like, will like generation beyond like Generation Z and stuff like that truly.
I think, you know, I think it'll, Zoomer,
you know,
it'll stand the test of time.
You know, like, will Maya, will your children have... an appreciation for a movie like this.
I'm going to show it to them, if they like it or not.
You know, and that's the thing. I think 80s movies and stuff like that have held up better than I think when I was a kid, 50s movies have. You know, because I think, you know, the 50s movies from the 60s or the 70s, I think, you know, most of the part we didn't give a shit about.
I often worry, though, like how the youth feels about like Freddy and Jason.
Yeah. Well.
And Chucky.
I think one of the things I was very happy about with the Friday the 13th video game were its sales numbers. Because for years, people have said, like, there doesn't need to be a Friday the 13th movie. It's old, it's dead, nobody cares. And they sold a million copies of that game in a month. And that was, they thought they might sell a couple hundred thousand. But, like, yeah, I was like, yeah, people love that character. For some reason, they do. Even though he's not much of a character, they love him. And they would like to see another one, but there hasn't been one for a number of years. Due to legal issues and producing and things like that, you know, and the person who owns the franchise isn't that smart. So sometimes, you know, bad things happen. You know, I think Ready Player One wasn't a great movie, but I saw that on opening weekend. And the best reaction in the movie was that guy, it's fucking Chucky. And he gets killed by Chucky. And that was the best reaction in the movie.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think people love these horror icons and these characters because there's very few of them. You know, I think an action hero is a dime a dozen, and a fantasy hero is a dime a dozen. But you talk about your slashers, you got Freddy, you got Jason.
Different staples of it.
Yeah, you got Chucky, and you know, every now and then you add a new one. We had in the 90s, they added, you know, of course, Michael Myers, obviously. Yeah. They added Ghostface. And yeah. I think recently we've added Art the Clown with Terrifier.
Yes.
As another horror icon. And like I said, it takes time for these things to develop. And then, like I said, you know, I wouldn't have thought a slasher movie would be very popular, but Terrifier destroyed it at the box office.
Yes. In
great numbers. And that is what we've sort of talked about, is a real independent movie.
Mm-hmm.
A guy just with a camera and some passion, just making a movie, getting it out there, and it hit. You know, Terrifier isn't great, but it showed what he wanted to do. And I think Terrifier 2 is a much better example of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but it's the same with, like, Evil Dead.
Yeah, I think Evil Dead is just an example of what he wanted to do. Yeah.
But Evil Dead 2 is better. Terrifier was just okay. It's very gritty and raw.
Mm-hmm.
But Terrifier 2 is a little bit more refined.
Yeah.
And there's a little bit more things figured out.
Yeah. And, like, you know, it has a final girl. So, I mean, like, yeah. You know, you want to buck trends, but, you know, you have to give the viewers what they want. You know, you know, that's the thing. You know, you can have a brutal killer, but he's got to get his comeuppance when the runtime is over. It's how it works.
Now, when The Evil Dead first came out, Were they portraying it as a horror film or?
Yes.
Okay. This was so that way they were going for horror for that.
Yeah, it wasn't until Army of Darkness that they marketed for more of a comedy.
So I'm guessing they must have listened to the audience feedback on it and said, okay, hey, they're not really taking this serious as a horror film. They're gonna this more, you know, tongue in cheek kind of funny slasher.
Yeah, and I think it's just it's something Raimi wanted to do more of, and I told you about Crime Wave where he wanted to do a lot of that,
yeah.
And just it didn't really get to materialize like he wanted. And he's like, well, I can do what I want with Evil Dead, and he's like, let's lean into that because I think like I can do that, I can nail that, and he was right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of a lot of directors who could have done a horror movie and then go back to something as comedic as that. And Raimi's had incredible range throughout his career, so
yeah,
his level of camp I think was perfect to bring in this era of superhero movies because he had done some pretty decent prestige dramas like. The Gift, and I'm trying to remember that movie with Billy Bob Thornton and Bill Paxton, where they find $1 million and they all end up killing each other. A Simple Plan, pardon me. And that's a great movie. I think that was like a Golden Globe nominee. So he'd shown that he had these kind of chops and he could still do that. So him being able to do something that's kind of cheesy like a comic book movie,
yeah.
But give it just enough dramatic focus to make it something people cared about. And it's another good example. Spider-Man does it pretty well, but Spider-Man walks so Spider-Man 2 could run. Because that movie nails that tone.
Mm-hmm.
It is the perfect line between comic book cheese and a real movie about people you care about. And that's what's different about Spider-Man 2. You care about everybody in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the end of the movie, one of my favorite moments is Doc Ock looking at Spider-Man where he takes his mask off, reveals he's Peter Parker, and he chuckles, brilliant but lazy.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, I get it. That's why you don't do anything else. You're the fucking Spider-Man. That moment doesn't work without all that character work between the two of them. That Doc Ock isn't a bad guy at all. He's a really good person. He's just been manipulated, and they carried that into that other MCU film.
Yeah,
for sure. Yes. Yes, they did.
Yeah.
I personally love that last one. The third. Is it No Way Home?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This new Spider-Man. I thought it was really great.
I don't know. I wasn't too crazy about the Multiverse of Madness. I got kind of bored. In it a little bit.
I think that was one of the stronger efforts from the MCU over the last couple of years, but that isn't saying a ton. But I still
literally
enjoyed
watched
it
because of Sam Raimi. I thought, oh, it's going to be interesting. And you could see hints of Sam Raimi.
There were some Raimi
very,
moments in it.
Very visceral, like ugly moments with zombie-ish looking themes in there, but it didn't really do anything for me.
Yeah.
The multiverse thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think multiverse just didn't really land with a lot of people, you know. Yeah. You have to be doing some fun, interesting things with it. And they did a couple of things that were interesting, but not enough to really maintain it. You know, like it was nice to see a different world. I kind of like Scarlet Witch killing the alternate Avengers.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a fun scene.
Yeah.
You know, that was cool.
That was brutal. That was very brutal.
But like I said, a lot of the stuff in those scenes are references to like a What If show on Disney Plus. So you don't, like Agent Peggy Carter becoming Captain Britain or whatever, like that's not a thing in the movies. That's only in a TV show.
Yeah.
So like if you've never been introduced to that character, it might be kind of weird to you. Maybe you just roll with it, but you know, that's kind of the problem Disney has.
All right. Well, I think we've exhausted Evil Dead 2.
I think, Mara's been giving me the sign for like 5 minutes. It's time to wrap up the show.
Yeah.
And I'm like, people are chatting and having a good time. And you're like, let's wrap it up.
Got lost. Got in there.
But the point is, everybody loves Evil Dead 2, and we got to talk about it. And I was really glad that we did. I have no idea what's on the docket for next week. We'll figure that out.
Well, we got to do our best and worst at some point.
Yeah, so I think that's what's coming up next. We'll probably do our worst of 2025, and then we'll follow that up with our best of 2025. And then we'll probably go right into Oscar coverage.
Yeah. Basically. But all right.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks
a lot for being on the show. We really appreciate it. Gave it a different vibe this week, and this was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was fun.
Yes. Yeah, we went an hour and 10, so we had a good time, John.
Yeah.
Long form content.
All right. And with that, guys, we are out.
Bye-bye.